to get started on, it's time for a paradigm shift in asset management. It's not just semantics. So we have a panel today. We're going to have them self-introduce. So, of course, my name is Henrik Gior. I'm with Another Day Consultancy. And as mentioned, I'm the host and producer of Another Day Podcast and Another Day Blog. And we'll just go down the road and have them self-introduce. Please.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kevin Groom. I'm the founder of Pike and Ein. Our product, Campaign Drive, sits, according to the analysts that you're talking about, this space between DAM, TCMA, through channel marketing automation. Distributed DAM, as the Gartner analysts would call it. But basically, we are a DAM that serves the multiple locations of major brands and creates a level of authorship at the local level that is sometimes seen as daunting and is often seen as essential. So what I'll bring to the panel today, I hope, is that kind of local and distributed user perspective.
Good afternoon. My name is Frank DiCarlo. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for RPR Graphics. RPR Graphics is a 60-year-old company. Last 20-some-odd years, we've been getting involved or are involved in digital asset management. We streamline workflows. We create efficiencies for creative operations, in-house marketing and advertising departments. DAM is just one of the things that we offer in different services that can improve time to market. So Alex was talking a little bit about Zynet earlier. That's one of the asset management systems that we offer to our clients. We've been offering that for about 15 years. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Schneider. I am the co-founder of a content strategy consulting agency called Avenue CX. We focus on enterprise content strategy, personalization, and omnichannel, typically for B2B companies.
Hi, I'm Lily Shestag. I have my master's in library science from Pratt and have a background in implementing enterprise-wide digital asset management systems for both physical and digital collections in the fashion industry.
So first question for our panel is, what are the pros and cons of a single versus multi-solution approach? Who wants to take that first?
I'll go. Okay. Hi, again. So I think that the pros can be that you don't end up in a position where you need to customize one system. You have some flexibility if you use more than one. In terms of upgrading, the cons are generally in data inconsistencies that can happen across multiple systems. But with REST APIs, generally those issues can be solved.
Sometimes you don't have a choice. I work with a lot of companies that are, they have been around for 50 plus years. They have a lot of legacy systems, and until somebody retires, that system's not going away. So if you have, there are pros and cons if you're going in and you have that choice, that's awesome. I think it all comes down to what are your requirements and what meets those requirements. If you have a one-size-fits-all, awesome, that's great, but that might not meet your requirements. So sometimes you may have to have multiple packages or platforms to do what you need to do. It really, again, comes back to your requirements.
I think that's well said. It really comes down to whether you're looking for a holistic approach or a best-in-breed, and I agree it comes down to what your requirements are and what you're really looking for for the results. The larger guys are going to tell you that they can do everything under the sun. That's not entirely true, and that, again, it depends on your needs and what it is that you're looking for out of your DAM and your workflows. If there's something that's working really well right now, it might make sense for you to stick with that and find a way to integrate it with a DAM. Again, it really comes down to what I've learned over the years is everybody's unique. It's just everybody's got a different set of guidelines or a different set of rules or ways in which they work. And if something's working, it's really may not make sense to offset that or bring that into a system because it's a lot of time and effort that may not yield the results that could easily be integrated into something else that you could purchase. So really it's up to the company. If you're just starting out and you're large, it might make sense to go with somebody that can do everything and incorporate that workflow. But if you already have things that are working well and in place, you might look at to do the best breed.
What we're seeing, if you look back historically at, say, the MRM vendors, marketing resource management vendors of the early 2000s, those guys promised an all-in-one solution. And they still do promise an all-in-one solution. But I think where the client, where the customer community is going these days is from kind of a foundational element. And I think the good news for this room is that DAM is that foundational infrastructural element. And they're beginning to snap in applications as time goes by. That seems to be the trend. The devil in those details, though, is nothing, as I'm sure you all know, is as simple as snap in. REST APIs are great. Issues of security and constancy among vendors remain. The governance talk that we just had earlier today, I think, is fantastic for thinking about a snap-in application. And so where I go on the question, do you use all-in-one or do you assemble it yourself? It depends on the maturity of your own organization. So it's really looking inside yourself. Do you have the governance? Do you have the elements? And do you have sort of the necessary stakeholders at headquarters to support a true, you know, combination of elements that are right-sized for your environment? So I think it's an essential decision, but one that you start with self-examination first.
Is a nomenclature used by digital asset management professionals and content stewards groups important, or are they just a new way to talk about your world? Or are there new ways to talk about your world? Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even though DAM is growing tremendously, it's still, in my opinion, very, very niche. So I think it's important to hold on to digital asset management as, you know, the label, so that more people know what it is that we do. That being said, I'm a librarian. I think more and more so companies are realizing that the library and archive professionals are experts in the field. And so I think there's opportunity there to redefine it for librarians and archivists too.
And as a fellow librarian, I totally agree. We just like organizing things. That's what we do. So I totally agree. And also, a lot of what I do, particularly in content strategy, which includes, you know, my definition of content is very broad. You know, it's anything essentially that you can deliver to someone else and that you can store. So that includes, images, video, text, VR experiences, everything. And one of the things that I run into a lot when I engage with clients is I'm always educating them, which is fine because I'm happy to talk about what I do and why it's important, and using terms that resonate. If they get used to digital asset management, go with it, stick with it. I have this whole back and forth with some of my colleagues in the content strategy world. They want to call it content engineering. I'm like, we just got them used to content strategy. Can we please not use content engineering? So I think, you know, consistency and content education is really important.
Okay. I'm in a rush.
We'll just switch it up. So I couldn't agree more about the notion that DAM historically has been seen as moving objects, digital objects around. And yet now we deal with things that are much more streamlike. And then the other thing that I think we can add to that is that we're not there merely to store and distribute. We're there so that folks can reassemble and redeploy those assets in new forms. So those are the things that I think we can add to our conversation. But I completely agree. We've got enough acronyms already. And for me, DAM is that spine that we should hang on to and we should build around. So I would say keep the acronym. It's nice and simple, and it's kind of humorous, too.
Those jokes now.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yes.
Coming from a service angle and just catering to clients and wanting to streamline their workflows, you know, the acronyms, you need to be able to dumb it down. And you need to know who it is that you're talking to and the reasons in which they are looking for a change, or you're trying to convince them of the change. People don't like change, but they like new, right? So I approach it that way. Here's a new way of looking at how you store your assets. Here's a new way in which we can define your metadata, your taxonomy, ontology. And you know, when you start to see their eyes glaze over, you got to take a second, remember who it is that you're talking to, and why. What is it that's going to appeal to them, or why are they in this conversation? Again, with because I'm dealing with clients, they're not as apt to. Maybe want to sign over a PO or open their wallets when they really don't know what it is that you're talking about. You need to be able to speak to what it is that's going to help them. You know, getting back to that old ROI question, which is very difficult and damn like in many different industries, but to appeal to who it is that you're talking about and knowing when the acronyms are right and when they're not, but specifically about what it does and how it can save a tremendous amount of time, how it improves workflows. That's what's important. That's what we continue to offer, and that's what I feel you should be bringing, or what else should be bringing to the table when we're talking about this this incredible software and that we come to know so well, right?
Yeah, and I would agree that with all of you, actually, there's enough alphabet soup out there of all the acronyms that we happen to use, so we may as well stick to what your institution understands and continue using the same words and nomenclature, if you will, and acronyms, if you will. But I think it's really important that in order to present those words, you also need to present the value, the continued value as a digital asset management professional or whatever your role happens to be around digital asset management, and continue offering that value of not just the system doing X, but that you are helping the system do X, because dams don't feed themselves, right? You feed the dam as digital asset management professionals. You enter the metadata for the most part. You curate it. You cull it, you curate the assets as well. You don't create them, that's somebody else's job usually, but that's okay. And as long as the organization continues to understand, even if you have to repeat yourself multiple times and have that repeated conversation of why you have that value and what you're presenting and why the dam has value and why you need to continue investing in it, because there is no finish line in dam, right? Unless you stop creating assets, which probably isn't going to happen anytime in this century. So, next question. Does it affect stakeholder value or budgetary decisions as far as what we just discussed? We kind of answered that to a degree.
Does the changing of the terminology affect stakeholder value?
Yeah.
Change it up. Yeah. Well, here's what we're seeing. We're seeing more and more stakeholders in dams. Folks who 6 months ago, a year ago, didn't know that they were going to be interfacing with that element of the corporate enterprise, and now it's becoming central to their day-to-day life. So what we call it matters a lot. What I like about, as we were just in the Campbell's presentation, the term was the dam. We put an article in front of the acronym and we made it a noun. As opposed, I've never heard anybody say, yeah, I'm going to put it in the ERP. I just don't hear that, right? So the dam to me, it becomes much more of a daily tool, part of the fabric of our work lives. And so for those new stakeholders, keeping it simple and keeping it concrete, I think helps a ton. So once again, I'd advocate, let's stick to our language.
I was just going to say, I like where the industry is going in that regard, because years past, we were talking to only the IT department, and it seemed to be their baby. And I'm I speak a lot better to the production teams, to the creative departments. And they're more involved now with IT. So it's no longer just speaking IT and, what do you mean, Mac? Did you say Mac? I said Mac. Stop treating the creative departments like the redheaded stepchild. We need to incorporate them into what it is that you're doing if you're going to be offering a solution that's company-wide. If it's just for the creative team, then we can speak that. But I think it's great now that we're getting more involved with other departments in the companies rather than just IT. So it's becoming more of a company decision rather than an IT need.
And who are those stakeholders? Just so we clarify, like you mentioned, stakeholders are paying attention and things like that.
Yeah, so for us, there's a whole new breed of administrators arising at regional levels. And so these are people who are responsible for regional and, you know, sometimes business unit, but below business unit. And they have significant authority in the dam, and yet they may not have yet been educated, right, about what that means and how important it is to keep things organized. And they certainly do not have a degree in library science, which is such a valuable thing. The first time I met a library scientist, it was with Ogilvy, and it was a sea change for me, not because of technology, but because of concepts of organization. And we need all those folks, more and more folks all the time, to learn that discipline without feeling that it's onerous. And then all the way out at the edge for us, I was talking about, I'm going to make Barbara famous, my franchisee for a fast food restaurant. She has to understand the dam too. And she has about 30 seconds in her month to think about what it means. So we have to give her freedom without giving her the ability to make things confused. That's what we're seeing. But when we get there, when we get all the way out to the edge, we get this virtuous cycle of the assets getting reused and the brand voice getting more consistent and the entire organization getting more efficient. And I think that's where, you know, simplicity of terminology really helps.
Yeah, and, you know, it's linguistics, but it's presentation also. You know, we need evangelists out there for the dams in our companies in order to, you know, make a convincing argument to keep the resources intact and, you know, build teams to ensure, you know, long-term growth and sustainability. Most of the return on investment is usually based around, you know, efficient workflows and enhancing those, you know, the capabilities of the teams for workflow. But and even though I you know, I advocate for DAM as an archive, when you start upstream like that, it benefits the archive down the road when you start with the workflow process in the beginning and you see the benefits not only on the return on investment, but the archive in and of itself.
I think one of the key points also to real that really helps to get stakeholder buy-in is, and it's been mentioned before, is the content reuse, image reuse, video reuse, snippets, longer pieces, transcripts, all the pieces that come together that can be reused in many different ways throughout the, you know, the content ecosystem, whether it would be a website, an app, or just even internally. So I think that the idea that, you know, okay, we spent X number of dollars from a fancy ad agency to create a campaign, let's figure out how to really leverage all those assets as much as possible, because you paid a lot of money for it, make it work for you. Content is a corporate asset. It's not just a digital asset. It's a corporate asset that needs to pay its way.
Very well said. Mm-hmm. Great. Are there new file types and enterprise content that belong in our domain as digital asset management professionals, people working in the DAM, et cetera?
New content types, you're saying?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, for us, you know, what we're seeing is imagine the New York Public Library, which has a team of fantastic librarians who are driven by library science, welcoming millions of readers in. And those readers have the ability to create a new book there and add it to the card catalog and have the library not fall over on its side. That, I think, is where the paradigm shift is happening. We're democratizing what is a tremendously important asset, and we're welcoming in more authors. And the content types that they bring to us, the thing that makes them new is not so much their file name conventions or, you know, the file name extension. It's that they are assemblage of assets that were created out in the field and now need to be assessed for their value, their consistency, and their appropriateness for other people to use, too. So we're creating reusable assets from reusable assets. And that cycle is what I think is new.
I mean, I think some of us mentioned already 3D and VR content and potentially other file types that we'll see in the near future, whatever those look like. There's only going to be more platforms and more social media networks that we will all love to one degree or another. to display that content in some other manner, whether we want it or not, there, as discussed in the rights panel. So, moving on to the next question. What resources would you like to share that would be helpful to the audience to learn more about this, as far as paradigm shifts?
Well, I mean, I think that events like this, you know, other dam events that are, you know, you see across the country or even the globe, meetup groups, different library association events, anywhere that you can, you know, be face-to-face with someone else, you know, a colleague or, you know, just a lending ear is helpful to learn and grow.
I think that you all don't need to go to library school, but you have to have that sense of organization, which I know, you know, you're all digital asset managers are involved in that field, so you all have that sense. I mean, we still all have the junk drawer in our kitchen, but we have everything else kind of pretty organized in our kitchens, right? So we're all, you know, we all go off the rails a little bit. But I think one of the ideas of just that idea of organizing and helping to communicate that to others, there's a book by Robert Glushko called The Discipline of Organizing that is, it's a little bit on the older side, but I think it's an interesting and for some of you, it might put you to sleep, you know, before you go to bed, but I found it interesting. So.
I'll read it.
I would recommend, if you don't already know it and use it all the time, is just the Agile Manifesto. I think that in a lot of ways, what we're seeing is Agile practices are working their way out of the IT department and into more and more areas. In fact, creative production is very much becoming an Agile environment. And so, you know, I think those principles help with running the teams that we now, you know, as we run these systems, really there are teams that pop up and then dissipate and pop back up. I think learning how to run that in an agile way can be really, really helpful with rapid change. And that's on the web, by the way.
There's so much out there. and it's all, you know, it's all baby steps. You know, take one step at a time. Don't get overwhelmed if you're just starting out. Certainly you can start with some of the leaders that are out there. There's plenty of white papers that you can download for free. There's amazing consultants like Henrik that are out there for information. There's people in the field, John Howardowski from Optimity, who's right out here. I don't think John's here, but his book is terrific. Teresa Regley has put out some terrific things. Maybe the godfather, David Diamond, right? He's got some great stuff out there. So, yeah, poke around the resources. There's much out there. Depending on what stage of the game you're in.
I'll share two resources, not my own, for the most part. Since you probably know most of my content, which I mentioned earlier. One is How to Make Sense of MEMS. I did interview that author, full disclosure. That's if you're really in the weeds and you need to figure out how to get out of that big pile of leaves. But if you're a little bit more advanced and you want to compare human generated tagging to machine-generated tagging. I spent a year researching that, and you can find it all on tagging.tech.
Say that again?
Tagging.tech. That's the acronym. That's the URL. T-U-C-H. So I have one question that I'm going to ask the audience, and I'm going to take audience questions right after this, so just to warm you guys up. What's missing in this paradigm shift? If you were kings or queens of the universe and can make any change to make that paradigm shift happen.
AI that recognizes what you put in front of it.
Yeah, to follow on that, the importance of understanding empathy. You know, to empathize, to have your content be empathetic to the user experience. And I think that's one thing that if I could push that, that's what I would want to push.
That's great.
I really like that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Just to maybe build on that a little bit, I would say that in DAM we've gotten addicted to the search box And I don't think the search box is always all that helpful. So when you try to be empathetic to, you think of your least sophisticated user, whether that's a graphic designer in the studio who's never used a DAM before, or a franchisee in the field, as I often think about, they don't really, I think we assume they want to search and find. I think they want to be presented right from the get-go with what it is they already need. And so I think that's the, you know, in terms of, that's the art of user experience now. But I think it's key as these systems get more and more massive, they get harder and harder to use. And that could be, you know, the wrong direction for the whole thing to go. So I would really agree.
It's so true. Putting in the time to train your users and spend time with them and, you know, have real interactions is a big piece of it also.
And, you know, the support angle of this is often not about technology. I think it's about learning the lingo and learning the taxonomy. And yet we don't spend a lot of time because taxonomy is just as a word is really boring. So if we were going to change our terminology, isn't that a stuffed animal?
I have lots of tax terms for you.
Okay. Good. So, I mean, all I'm saying is that I think that what's missing a little bit in our whole industry is, well, it was the fellow with Zynet who said it, you know, we got to make it sexy for everybody who's involved. We got to make it fun. And I think if we can inject that ease of use and a little bit of that fun, we would end up with more enthusiastic users. And the training sessions are a great time to do this. If you've ever been in a 45-minute training session that's just a yawn fest on a go-to meeting that doesn't really work, you know you're introducing people to this thing you spent your life building for the past year, and it's not coming off as well as it should. So good training sessions, really good training sessions, I think are really missing. And video could be just do a really cool video instead. Mm-hmm. So creativity there.
Yep. Audience questions? Yes, all the way to the back.
So I'm trying to add something that I have a lot of questions about and love your opinions on is I think that I'm a librarian as well. But something that I think is interesting about digital asset management and also just information organization in general, content management in general, is like we're sort of long-term thinkers, right? We're trying to like make our, like I usually refer to it as like a spine, do you know what I mean? We're trying to make it solid and not flexible and be flexible, but not like one day it's like this and the next day it looks totally different. The user has to have a certain amount of expectation and comfort after a while to refine content, right? We're a little more long-haul thinkers, and the agile workflow, sorry guys, it's cold. The agile workflow I find is a little bit philosophically at odds with that because often it will only address issues once they're bad enough to be addressed. There's like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's a certain, I'm wondering how you have worked in DAM with this sort of like counter, I mean, but to me that feels like a philosophical concept, and I'd love to hear about how you navigate that or integrate them or balance the, you know,
so I'll repeat the question is around using Agile and DAM.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. So without telling any tales out of school, an example, a customer in the power sports business has a very large collection of agencies. And every agency, working for individual brands in this multi-brand environment, every agency had its own taxonomy. They had their own file name convention. They had their own this. They had their own that. And the result, if we had left it go completely uncontrolled, would have been chaos because our users were all multi-brand users. So what we needed to do, and this was very, it was agile in water. Let's put it that way. It wasn't real agile. So it was kind of, you know.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Well, it was, I mixed the drink. It was not a straight scotch. What we did was we brought those guys together, and this very much goes to governance. And it very much goes to committee. And it very much has to do with a bureaucracy getting involved with some people who are natively creative, right, and resist bureaucracy. But the benefits that we got from defining what our top-level architecture was going to be, very similar to what Campbell's described, was enormous. And we went from a system, a legacy system, that had very little usage. It was a refrigerator, not a radiator of assets. And we transformed from that. And the dealers never knew what we did, and they thought it was technology, but it wasn't. It was terminology. And it was because we got the agencies on board. So So that for me was an example of a small number of agile sessions, clearly about terminology, practice, and then we documented, but we kept it to one page. Remember that agile always says we prefer working software over documentation. So in a DAM, the documentation should be is the architecture of the folders. Right. I don't want to read any text on screen. I really don't. And I think we managed to do that. So that would be one example. And there's, you know, I'm sure countless others.
Next question. Then I'll ask it once. It can be really naive if you really want to.
We didn't provide any swag.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
No sexy swag. Sorry.
If you want sunglasses.
It can be naive or very technical. Keep in mind this is paradigm shifts we're talking about. Yes?
I have a question about some of the new graph databases graph databases is new, but the benefits of using that, I'm curious whether or not you have the experience.
Benefits of graph databases?
Yes.
I don't know. Graph databases.
For
Dan.
I can tell you we've started working with document databases like CouchDB, and those are offering us a great deal of flexibility, but not graph databases, not in our business, not yet.
Next question. Yes, it's here.
So like going back to how important librarians are, when we're speaking about like graph or like relation or graph or sort of like semantic data, like have you guys talked to the kind of like library world about that type of structure just because they're kind of the masters of that right now?
Yeah. For me, sorry, from our business perspective, and this goes back to a comment that was made on the previous panel, I think it was with NHL, we're very much driven as we develop the product by the needs of the customers that we serve today. And so it's in that regard, it's kind of agile too. So we haven't yet had someone come to us and say, we are dealing with highly scientific data, let's say, a big table that we now want to parse and explode into 10,000 assets and store them all, you know, at the same time. We haven't run into that yet. But I think, you know, the relationship between the vendor and the business is changing. And we're seeing a much more productive conversation and an ongoing conversation that means the software is evolving and I think sometimes verticalizing. So there's probably just, we're missing the right vertical vendor who's having that conversation. That would be my guess.
Over the years, as I said earlier, every client's different. And we have a team of cyberarians that assigned to the different clients so that we can help with the metadata, the taxonomy. What we do is just go through a needs assessment and based on our experience and having digital librarians experience over time is that we ask those questions. We find out what it is that they're looking for and we implement that for them and it changes. The governance, of course, is important. It's just the rapport and the relationship that you have with clients that we understand what it is and how they're searching. And getting all the different departments that are touching that library is just so important because you get their aspects, their points of view and how it is that they're searching and looking through the system. So that's how we handle that.
More questions?
I actually have one other thing, as from the librarian perspective. What I found is that while clients find what ontologies can do for them very interesting, they typically don't have the appetite to actually follow through on it. That's changing, and I see little pilot projects here and there. Typically it's, you know, they find it really interesting, but they just, either that or the right, typically they need some sort of impetus or project that can really leverage those kinds of defined relationships.
Yeah, and typically, you know, those with a librarian background or an information science background will have the creativity to make a completely new taxonomy that's specific for the business through the discovery phase with the users during implementation. So that's one of the major benefits of having a librarian on hand is you might not have the language defined, but they know how to create it either from out-of-the-box resources that they know of. You know, there's lots of out-of-the-box taxonomies that are out there to reference, or they have the skills and the creativity to organize it themselves based on what they hear from the users during discovery.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Any questions? So I'll throw one in.
I just wanted to add, Henrik, you've heard it touched upon a number of different times, and I'm sure you don't want to speak for everybody, but it's just so important to get as many people involved from the onset, even before you start to build your asset, your dam. Get them involved from the onset. Have them offer whatever it is that they need, and having the trainings to be fun and the governance to be something that's constant. You know, it's not, you know, you don't skip a meeting. You determine how many times in a given month you're going to do that, and you stick to it, and you hold people accountable, and you just get them involved in the process, because the return on that and having everybody involved in using the system is what's going to benefit your company in the long run. So I can't stress that enough, how important it is to get as many people that are involved in that system or using it involved from the onset and throughout the process, so it's constantly growing, as Henrik reminded us, because it is. It's an organism that continues to grow with your business.
Yeah, the buy-in is crucial.
Yeah.
Especially if you want users for some reason, or user adoption, kind of helpful. That's all checked.
Yeah.
One question, since we're digital and we're talking about paradigm shifts, does it matter where the digital asset management professional works if it's all digital and you're actually trusted by your organization?
I'll take a crack. In my view, the barrier of distance is not monumental. It just needs to be taken seriously. But once taken seriously, the whole point is that dams, erase the barriers of distance. What we see with our teams is that once we've got a core conversation going on between the administrators and sometimes developers, but mostly it's the administrators. Once the core conversation is going, the barrier of distance goes way, way down. And again, I think it goes to building that leadership team. The notion of command and control is giving way to democracy, which can yield chaos unless, I guess maybe it's more of a federal model. And I think that's coming. And that will, by necessity, be, you know, geographically diverse.
Yeah, I'm going to chime in and agree that it's a no. Predominantly because, for the most part, users are global.
Yeah.
They're stretched across multiple, times and days, and you have to be available for them generally all of the time when you're not sleeping. So, whether you're working from home or at, one or many different offices, I think it matters less now.
Just one other thing. So it matters less, but I still think it matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot, it depends on the organization. Some organizations are really good about remote, connections, particularly global companies. They just get used to it. They're used to it. But in some instances, being there as a physical presence, I think really helps encourage dam usage. You get to help the people who are perhaps uploading assets or the users, and it's that personal touch that sometimes help really reinforce the importance of the dam, and they think it's okay, and they're still going to use it.
Yeah, I agree. During times that are, critical for either implementation or training, definitely being, on-site in the office is important. But otherwise, uploading thousands of videos can happen anytime, anywhere.
Good. Any last questions? All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.